I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Mikel makes hay, Tuchel toils, Walker wheezes, and Richarlison sneaks one into the back of the net. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Thursday, 21st of April. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Eddie Russell.
And I am the spirit of Miguel Almiron.
And I think I join with all Football Ramble listeners in saying, uh-oh. Well, Luke Moore, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. I haven't worked with you for a while, Kate.
Yeah, and you're feeling sprightly.
Well, it's going to make it tough for you, that's
all. You're feeling like you've got something to say.
You know, we were talking before about my top five least favourite pieces of football lexicon.
Yeah.
I've come up with number five. Well, I got the first four quite easily, listeners, which included football club. Yeah, we know it's a fucking football club. Yeah. Just say club. Number five, Miguel. It's Miguel.
Oh, sorry, I messed it up. So what did I say? I'm the spirit of Miguel Almiron. Miguel Almiron. It doesn't matter.
There's a lot of Miguel.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, has he come back into the team to score a winning goal for this?
We'll find out.
If you were better friends with him as well, you would have called him Miggy.
Miggy, yeah.
You attempted, but you thought that was disrespectful, didn't you? And now look what's happened.
Eddie Howe did call him Miggy in his post-match.
So Arsenal went to Stamford Bridge and battered Chelsea 4-2 in the end. Two lovely goals from Eddie Nketiah. Bukayo Saka sunk a penalty. And Emile Smith-Rowe got in on the action as well. Mikel Arteta afterwards, Luke, saying that he'd been a bit unfair to Eddie Nketiah not playing him more. And that's true, isn't it? And is this the end? Two questions. Is this the end of Alexander Lacazette?
I think it's a bad day at the office for Mikel Arteta when you've got a player like Eddie Nketiah who sees Emil Smith-Rowe and Bukayo Saka making such an impact at Arsenal. I think they're both joint top scorers or something like that. They've both got
10 each.
Yeah, they both got 10 each. Great. And he thinks, I could do that. I mean, you've got problems in that area of the pitch. Neither of those two players, Smith Rowe or Saka, are out and out strikers. I can do a job, and I'm not playing.
Out of contract in the summer.
Exactly. So he all this stuff about contracts and all these things are seeded to the press about how he might want to move on. Arteta has to damp that down. And then he goes and scores two goals at Stamford Bridge in quite a big win. Although it's a great day at the office for Arteta on one level, on the pitch, off the pitch, it's a tricky situation for him. And I think that comment, to answer your question in a roundabout way, was perhaps maybe his attempt to try and start to knit all this back together again, because although I've heard people who know much more about Arsenal than me say, you know, we can't rely on Eddie Nketiah, we need a striker. I don't know if I agree with that, because we don't really know what Nketiah is capable of, because he doesn't play football games for Arsenal.
He's brilliant in the cups when he does get a chance.
But the only reason he's played in this is because they've not managed the personnel situation particularly well.
Lacazette's had COVID, right, as well.
Lacazette
with no backup has been their thing for the second half of the season, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Unless Nketiah is the backup. It's such an unusual situation with both those two running out of contract, and the club clearly sold on neither of them. And I suppose it's kind of an appropriate twist that Nketiah comes back into the team and gets two goals that you wouldn't expect in a win that you wouldn't expect, with a performance that you wouldn't expect as well.
And it was a lot of fun, wasn't it, Russ?
Oh yeah, not for you, obviously. No,
I'm just pure football purist today.
Right,
oh, good. Okay.
My identity is whatever team it is that I support will be parked.
I think also Nketiah.
I enjoyed it.
Seven goals in seven starts this season. I mean, he's really doing. I mean, he's got five goals in the League Cup, two goals and two starts in the Premier League, and a lot of the substitute appearances he's made, he's not been able to make an impact really. Mm. And it does seem, from the outside looking in, a little bit confusing. Arsenal have clearly got problems in that area, as you've talked about, and there are other players who have come through the ranks at Arsenal. Obviously been very well looked after and very well brought on in the academy. And Nketiah's another one of those, alongside Saka and Smith Rowe. He's just not getting a chance. And clearly there's a reason.
Say they clearly don't think he's of the same level.
Sure, but what I'm saying is
it seems like they're wrong.
On the back of one game.
No. But the point is this, right? He may not be at the level, but they don't have the luxury of choice at the moment, do they? So you might as well just give him a chance.
But I don't know. I think the thing is, I mean, obviously things changed a lot with those three successive defeats. But when you look at Lacazette's contribution, it's only been since the defeats have started happening that his lack of goals has been a real talking point. Because before that, I think people appreciate what he does for the team. It's interesting, reading a lot of Arsenal Twitter when Chelsea scored that equaliser, the Timo Werner equaliser. Like, well, the Nketiah goal's great. The equaliser is why Lacazette's in the team. Mm. And not Nketiah, which I think is quite an interesting point. Now, you know, it turns out well for Arsenal in the end. I don't know about you guys. I thought the pitch thing that Tuchel went on was just absolutely bizarre.
I think you're looking at a man who's been driven to the very edge by having to do a post-match with Jeff Shreves. Like, you know.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
I thought you were going to say British government sanctions.
Yeah, talking about having to take the weight of Chelsea Football Club on his shoulders.
I think that pales I think that pales into insignificance when faced with Jeff Shreves right in front of you. You know, all that other stuff can on the back burner when you've got to navigate 10 minutes with Jeff Shreves.
I thought Shreves helped him out.
Well, he did help him out.
A closed question. Yeah. Then he only has to say two Jeff words Shreves, and answer yes or no.
Absolutely right. Jeff Shreves helped him out.
Perfect interviewing.
By being abysmal at his job.
What a technical performer. Yeah.
But that immediately makes the head coach look grumpy, doesn't it?
But Andy, it does.
The head coach was grumpy.
But he was.
It's his right, by the way, just as a, not to be all kind of broadcast school here, as I'm sure I don't need to tell you, is his total right if you're asked a question that has a yes or no answer, it's totally his right to answer it with a yes or no answer. Yeah. And he doesn't have to do the job for the interviewer, does he? He doesn't have to like deliver the perfect 45 seconds just because that's the convention. Absolutely fucking right, Tuchel, yeah, I thought.
Absolutely.
Apart from
right.
the stupid thing about the pitch.
Well, it's interesting.
Which actually came in the press bit. Afterwards.
It did. And that's what I was going to come on to say. You know, you don't need to take my word for it that Jeff Shreves isn't really good at his job, because people who listen to the show for a long time know I don't like him anyway. So don't take my word for it if you don't want to. But what you can do is go and listen to what the BBC journalist got out of Tuchel after the game, which is much more interesting. And the journalist in the press conference afterwards who got that quote that you're talking about, Kate, about the pitch. That was weird from Tuchel. It's someone sitting to my right is very, very smug that the wheels look like they're about
guys,
to
you've been every single time Chelsea get beaten, everyone's like, oh, brass, the wheels are coming off.
People keep tweeting me about this, but I don't feel like it's the wheels coming off Thomas Tuchel at the moment. I mean, he's not meant to be happy when they lose. I think globally he's still doing a really good job. He's still the best man for the club, all that sort of stuff. I don't think we should put the cart before the horse here. But the interesting thing is when we were going back and talking about Lacazette and Nketiah and contracts, Christensen is an interesting one because Christensen and Rudiger are probably the two players, maybe alongside Mason Mount, although I don't think that's quite the same thing, that have benefited the most from Thomas Tuchel being there. You know, that they've gone from being considered average to being very important, especially in the case of Rudiger. But the chronology of their contracts means they're both running out of contract at a point, and now obviously Chelsea's circumstances have changed, but they've demanded a contract renewal, and it's almost as if they want to be paid on Tuchel rates rather than the rates of what they are in terms of the median of their career. Now, do I want to pay Rudiger? I guess is a more convincing case, but certainly Christensen. I think if you're Barcelona, who are going to sign him, looking at that, thinking, shit, we've thrown the bag at that, and maybe he was just having a good spell. I mean, you know, it's not the first time for Barcelona. Let's make that clear.
but players and agents do that all the time.
Yeah,
right?
and that is the bet you're making. You know,
you've got to get your timing right if you're trying to negotiate a new deal for your player.
Yeah.
And you know, off the back of a Champions League win and all the things you've talked about, I think that's kind of fair enough. And it's up to Chelsea to kind of see through that and navigate that in a skillful way as part of the negotiation.
And they have.
The pitch thing, guys, to return to that, the pitch Tuchel thing is, to say the pitch is difficult to play here maybe sounds like an excuse, but it is a very, very difficult pitch that we have here. It's not in our favour. And he blamed Christensen's error on the pitch. I mean, he could probably have tried to blame the Nketiah second goal, which I really enjoyed, by the way, on the pitch. If he was just throw it all in, just go all in on it if you're going to. But for me, Russ, that was my favourite goal, probably, even just because it was
better
so
than the Saka penalty. Come on.
I mean, that was adorable. But he slipped a little bit, didn't he, as he was addressing it. Anyway, it was a nice penalty. But
are you calling him a Richarlison of a finisher?
Oh my God, we'll get on to that. But yeah, I just thought the Nketiah second was really enjoyable. Just the reflexes and the kind of the instinctual way that he toe-poked it in. Ooh, little click.
That was very satisfying sounding click. Good
for
you.
That's how I felt it.
Another skill for you. will the talents never stop? End. I felt that the whole game was a really good indicator of exactly the amount of football that Chelsea have had to play and the fatigue that looks like it's setting in. Now, I know Andy's not a big fan of kind of reading too much into individual games. I totally understand
that. They flagged in the second half.
It's a sensible way of going about things. But, you know, I talked about on Monday, West Ham playing 50-odd games. I think Chelsea will play 60-something. They will definitely play more than 60. And if you look at how the mistakes came to pass, it did look a bit like mental fatigue. Particularly, so the best example of that would be Azpilicueta giving away the penalty. It just had all the hallmarks of a man who's 32 years old, couldn't get in the right position against a player much younger than him,
and a lot smarter than him, who bought the penalty.
Smarter.
Yeah. But if Azpilicueta defends properly, that situation doesn't even arise. He's caught out of position because he's playing wing back at 32 against a very, very young, vibrant attacking three.
Yeah, it was a lifeless second half performance, really, wasn't it? And I think it's fair enough. I think you go into that, and there must be at least a bit of subconscious. Yeah, we can win this without getting out of third gear, really.
Also, they can fuck over Spurs, so why not? Azpilicueta at the end, speaking of which, reminded me of our conversation about Granit Xhaka from a few rambles ago. When he went up, some fan was giving him shit from the side. Yeah. Did you see this? And he kind of went over to him, and then by the end,
they were
fan was
giving
the
thumbs up,
the double thumbs up, which I thought was quite enjoyable.
It was
very
enjoyable.
Classic thing of like, I don't know if I think that Azpilicueta should have done that. I think, the reminder that, like, I can hear you and I'm a real human person.
Absolutely
here.
Right. I completely agree.
It's quite enjoyable.
And is it not a bit of, as you were talking about before, I'm tired and I can't.
No, but he's had to
get up with it.
It's an extra trip, isn't it? Just trudge off if you're that tired. Don't do some extra yards.
Was the guy not on the same side as the tunnel?
Probably was, yeah. So you thought it was a bit of, I can do this on the way.
Two birds, one stone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, the football fandom is littered with, and I remember this happening when I was a much younger man watching football. I would be at Fratton Park. And, you know, I'm a Portsmouth fan. I'll be in the Fratton End and you'd be hammering People will be hammering players all game.
Please not Guy Whittingham.
Awful stuff. No, not your own players. But Andy, do you know what the thing was? The moment a player who was a target of 90 minutes of basically, let's call it abuse, because that's what it is, flicked them the V's or whatever, they'd be all on the football, all on the radio phone-ins. He's a disgrace of an example to my son. Well, you've been standing next to your son, mate, for 90 minutes calling him a wanker. So, you know, let's look a bit closer to home. So I do applaud that from Espiritu Quetta. Yes. You know, I wouldn't quite take it to the Cantona level of response, but I think on the Cantona scale, that was very low.
Yeah. These days, from the sound of it, after playing a full game of wing-back, he probably couldn't make it over the advertising order,
exactly,
could he?
Exactly. Imagine if he did that. Yeah. Imagine if he tried it and just hit the advertising order and just fell over.
Do it at half-time. Get yourself taken off.
But I don't want to come out the back of this chat really negative about Espiritu Quetta. He's been a brilliant player and an amazing servant to Chelsea. I think he's a fantastic professional.
And his goal was great.
It was. Well, he took it well. And he's still got a lot to offer, of course, but it did look like it was very tough towards the end of a very long season for them. And that, I think that partly explains what happened. But let's not take anything away from Arsenal. I think, you know, they've bounced back at a time when they'd needed to because they've been in poor form. And that, as we've said repeatedly, it looks like Chelsea will do enough to get over the line into third, but that fourth place is still open.
Yeah, when I said it's a performance you didn't see coming from Arsenal, I mean that in a complimentary sense. I really didn't think they had that in them. I thought they had 2-0 defeat written all over it before the game.
And even when they were playing well, generally
it's really
speaking,
impressive.
Even when they were playing well, Andy, generally speaking, they were beating teams you'd expect them to beat, and they're still coming up short against other good sides.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a bit of a bolt from the blue, absolutely.
That's true.
Six English players in the starting lineup for Arsenal for the first time since the turn of the millennium.
And that's great stuff. That is honestly great stuff as well, because for the reasons we've talked about with Nketiah, right? I think Nketiah is He's done all he can do. I know maybe Andy feels slightly differently, but I think he's done all he can do.
The way that Arteta talked about him afterwards is exactly the way that Tuchel talked about Tammy Abraham this time last year.
Oof.
It's like that sort of, it's not fair on him. I should play him more. Mm. I'm not going to, and he's going to leave.
But hey, it's also like how Pep Guardiola talked about Phil Foden.
Mm. Yeah, but in a different way.
No, his only problem is he's got a manager who doesn't play him enough.
I will make you a bet right now.
Okay.
Eddie Nketiah, 20 goals in the Bundesliga next season.
And I would say to you, because I'll need to have the final word because I'm psychopathic, that...
You're a sociopath, aren't you, if you haven't killed anyone yet?
I think you'll find in medical circles, sociopath's quite an outdated term now. Maybe listeners can come in on that. But I would say, I think that Tammy Abraham improves Chelsea this season. So who's the real loser there?
Nketiah, an ex-Chelsea player as well, of course. So did it to them at their own bumpy little home. Everton against Leicester.
They should change it to that. They should change it from Stamford Bridge to the bumpy little home.
Try and get the...
They're not Mr. Todd living in a burrow.
Try and get the wind in the willows fans behind them. Yeah, Everton took on Leicester at Goodison Park. It was 1-1 in the end. That was a massive... point. You don't like massive either, do you, Brass? That was the other one you were saying. Damn it. I have to be so careful around
you. So important.
It doesn't mean he's right just because he pronounces foreign players' names with a different accent. You can say what you want. You can still have your own opinion.
It was a massive
point. I agree, Kate. It was massive.
Giant number one. The binary system was just totally fucked up by Everton.
Could I also pull you up a side point because you said Everton took on Leicester. Everton don't really take anyone on. Not this season.
They took on the challenge of attending a game of football.
They trudged onto the pitch, thought we'll give it our best go.
And they did.
They did. They got a point.
And in the end, frankly, to manage to get a point out of that when Richarlison missed so many times.
And did his best to miss the equaliser.
God, that was poor. Yeah. He really scuffed that. It was whatever the opposite of a confident strike is, that's what that was.
I mean, but it ended up going in the one spot that Kasper Schmeichel couldn't get it.
Yeah, helped on by the deflection.
Can I reserve a little bit? I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to, I need to read the room here. Can I give Lampard a bit of credit here? Is that going to go down badly with you two?
Well, you can do what you want to do, and then we can shoot you down.
Okay, fine. Okay. I'll do my bit, and you can do the real bit. Yeah. You can do the proper analysis. So Everton started really poorly in this game, so I think we can all agree. And Leicester should have gone a couple ahead, really. And then that probably would have been that.
Yeah, Brendy. We must have been pissed off.
Yeah. And then, but what he did do, and I thought it was quite interesting, Lampard's words after the game as well. Because he was quite honest, and sometimes he's honest and you think, oh, he's just throwing his players under the bus because he's from that Redknapp school of kind of, they suddenly become them rather than us when it's not going well. But actually, they did come out of it with a positive result, and it's a real platform for them. It's a really important point, if I can skirt around using the word massive, because it puts them 4 points above Burnley and they're on the same goal difference, right? And they've got two tough games coming up, Everton. So it was really important to get a point. Mm. He said at half time, we need to do this, we need to be more compact, we need to do this and do that. And I thought it was quite interesting. And for him to have that impact on the team, we know Leicester are vulnerable, but he was noticeably able to make an impact on that team in the second half to the point where they were well worth the point towards the end. And I think that's probably quite a positive thing going into these two next games that they, you know, you wouldn't fancy them to get anything out of.
No judgment on Lampard here, because as I've said from the beginning, when he got appointed at Everton, I don't think there's really any coach who can properly haul them out of the situation.
The problems are bigger than just the coach,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Much bigger. I don't think he's got the ultimate relevance to it. The reason that Everton will stay up, and they will stay up, is because Burnley are not good enough to catch him.
Yeah.
That's what will happen. It won't be because of anything that Everton have done.
I think that's right. But, Kate, I don't know if you were on the show when me and Andy had this disagreement before. I think it might have been Marcus hosting. But I differ to Andy in principle. I understand that point. But the reason Lampard's taken this job is because he can spin a narrative to, let's face it, a willing media that he has, quote, saved Everton. And that'll be a real boost to his reputation if he keeps them in the Premier League. You're right, but ultimately I don't think that'll matter for Lampard and his career. And that's really what he cares about.
Do you think, but given that Everton at this stage in the season are still continue to be in a relegation scrap, whether or not we think that they'll probably stay up after this result, despite the next two, well, in particular, they're facing Liverpool and then Chelsea.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know that he can argue that he saved them.
But they were in a real... I mean, Kate, they were in a properly shit state before he came along. I mean, really
bad. Have you looked at the table?
Yeah, no, but I'm saying... But you can't blame him for what's come before him, is what I'm saying. It's not like they were doing okay and they're doing it. It's not like he's done a Steve Bruce or West Brom and taken them from like 5th to 12th and talked about how he needs 6 new players.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the measure of success for an English coach.
Well, he's managed 1,000 games, mate, so he's done okay. He's done an okay career, Steve Bruce. You know, he may not have won the Champions League, but he's been around the game a long time. And if Frank Lampard's looking to fashion a managerial career, which we presume he is,
yes,
then he will be able to turn that narrative to his advantage. But whether it's bullshit or not is irrelevant.
When you talk about fashioning a managerial career of any sort of length and substance, I wonder on the other side of that, say if Burnley do get it together and say if Everton do, and it was so important for them to get something out of this because God knows they don't look like getting anything on the road.
Yeah.
If they were to go down, where does that leave Lampard?
It's a big gamble. That's the downside to the gamble, but that's always been the case. I mean, Burnley plays Southampton and they've got another winnable game. Wolves. They've got Wolves at home after that. They've got Southampton and Wolves at home.
Right.
They could win both those games. I mean, they could. It's not against the complete realms of possibility they could win those. And if they do, Everton are in big trouble.
I'm not saying Beckhorst is scored again.
That's, yeah, exactly. That's what a gamble is, though, right? There's always going to be a downside. You've got to make your call. I mean, the point I'm making about the Redknapp family, of which Lampard is an extended part, is I heard Harry Redknapp, on the radio a week or so ago talking about how, you know, no one knew the kind of player Luka Modric was. He was a left-sided midfielder, not being used to his best until I got hold of him and played him in the middle. Kind of these people.
To be fair, he was quite good at Tottenham.
they're fashioning their own narrative, though, and Lampard's very much a part of that. That's the only point I'm making.
He discovered Bale before Lampard came. Everton was 16th, 4 points off the relegation zone. They're now 17th, 4 points off the relegation zone. So, you know, why don't these lads just manage them?
Strong and stable.
Stable and
it's more the same. It's more of the same.
And conservative.
Yeah.
All right, then, time for a break. We'll be back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
In football, you've worked with and alongside some of the biggest names in the game, some of the biggest coaches you've come up against as well. Who's been your biggest influence in your coaching career?
I think myself.
Adorable.
Yeah.
Just adorable. It's all about the narrative. Welcome back to the Football Ramble with me, Luke, and Andy Brassel. In your ears. You sound like a married couple.
We do. You didn't even give my surname.
No.
It makes it sound like I've taken your name when he says Luke, when she says Luke and Andy Brassel.
No, I've taken yours.
No, he's taken your name.
Luke and Andy, but that Brassel wasn't made clear in the way that you laid it out. Do
got,
it again.
We've got
Do
Luke and Andy coming for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, I like it. Do it again.
No. I will not. Time for some email.
I'll do a Mason.
Edit. Edit. You know if you got an email to show
Yeah, it ends quite abruptly, that one.
I'm
on edge when I hear that one because I think it's going to end really suddenly and I have to be on my game.
Yeah, where's your key change, pal?
I know, exactly.
That's why I think that's an ode to Sven, particularly.
But, yeah. Is that an exclusive, mate?
Absolutely not.
Great. It's great to know. We all suspected it. Great to know. Yes, emails. There's several ways you can send an email into us to show at footballramble.com and get it read out. Good ideas, witty observations. Let's be honest, criticisms of our output. But another way you can do it is by being called Tim Finger.
Friend of the Ramble, Tim Finger.
He is friend of the Ramble. If you're going to be called Tim Finger, you're probably going to get your email read out. He says the following. I wanted to follow up on Monday's Ruben Loftus-Cheek Love Fest. My wife and I, steady, had the absolute pleasure of meeting him on a trip to Stamford Bridge for our honeymoon a few years ago and wanted to confirm that he is indeed a wonderfully nice human being. He was happy to spend time chatting and talking about the team and genuinely listen to what we had to say. His handshake was like a warm embrace and he has enough good looks to add a glow to those around him. He's a top-class guy and deserves all the kind words that you all offered on Monday. And I'm delighted that Tim got in touch with that story, so thank you for that, Tim. Because when I spoke so effusively in my praise about Ruben on Monday, I was kind of half suspecting a barrage of responses saying, oh, I've met him and he's an absolute prick. But we didn't get any of that.
No.
And I'm pleased that Tim can ratify my initial first impression.
The devil's in the detail, Luke, because it says a few years ago.
True.
Before he made it big.
Nah, he might have changed.
Tim doesn't clarify if this was the honeymoon package, the trip to Stamford.
What, a bit of the RLC package?
Yeah.
Can guarantee you an hour with Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He's got nothing else on at that point. He's not playing.
The best football wedding venue I've seen is, I think, the Den. Imagine getting married at the Den. Wow.
Yeah. I also, I mean, mate, as an extension to that, going back to Fratton Park again, if I may, I've spent a lot of time at Fratton Park.
Would Mrs. Moore not let you do that?
First of all, she hasn't taken my name, so.
Good on her.
But the amount of bad memories of Fratton Park, and I'm speaking as a fan, and you see someone going and proposing to their new fiance at the ground or getting married. Why would you do that?
I saw someone once propose to their then fiance, because they accepted, at half time in one of the Papa John's trophy games between Joel and Wimbledon. I mean, honestly,
Was it a Wimbledon fan, presumably?
No, it was a Charlton fan.
It was a Charlton fan.
It was a Charlton. So can you imagine saying, yeah, do you remember? How did you propose to Grandma? Well, it was at half time in a Papa John's Trophy game. There were less than 1,000 people there, so it was a very intimate, candlelit setting. We drew 2-2, but we lost the extra point on pens.
That game will be the only instance of there being more people at the wedding than actually at the proposal, which completely rules out the whole point of doing a proposal publicly.
At the stag do, definitely.
Did you say it was at Wimbledon?
No, it was at the Valley.
Yeah, because the Valley's one of the worst stadiums around as well. Fans there are awful.
Well, they're just painting it with some love. That's how I make it glow, like Ruben Loftus-Cheek does. You know, we're going to come on to half-time interviews
yes,
in a minute,
we are.
So actually maybe that could feature as a whole segment.
Reading fans have taken a lot of stick from this show.
Fuck did you do that? Like 2 days before I was due in Reading.
Well, do you want me to move the station? I can move it away to Charlton if you want. I've never seen so many fans just silently eating crisps.
I'm off to Bristol Rovers at the weekend, so if you've got any like shade you want to throw at them,
no problem with them at all.
Thanks for that. Get in touch, show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble. Manchester City beat Brighton 3-0 in the end, returning to the top of the table with, what felt like a routine win. Sure, Brighton were 0-0 at half-time. For me, interesting to see how a proper team deals with the choppy little stuff that Brighton get up to and the kind of tactical nous of Graham Potter. Mm. And Pep was happy afterwards because they've mathematically brass qualified for the Champions League.
He did actually make a point of saying,
it's nice. Yeah, you got to celebrate the small wins or the big wins for most people.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it was a proper panelling, wasn't it?
Andy, do you reckon he was like a bit worried that he was just thinking about what happened to David Moyes the moment he could mathematically not qualify for the Champions League at Man United? He got sacked straight away. I love the idea of going and having a little wall chart at home and going, oh, for a big XL, thank God for that.
Phew.
Whew, I'm here for another season.
Sign the lease for another year.
Yeah, exactly. But they did get battered, didn't they?
They absolutely did. I mean, you were quite offended, Mace, with this being first on Match of the Day, weren't you?
Tiny bit, yeah. Actually, was. I mean, I know it's like, oh, it's the title race, but it wasn't. This wasn't the one with all the jeopardy. Exactly.
No.
Also, the bloody someone called it the something like the Southwesty London Derby or something. Someone made up some new London version of the Derby for that game. The Chelsea Arsenal game doesn't exist anyway. Forget
no, that's
that.
Mad. That
but
is mad.
Either way, that was a fucking good game. Yeah. Kyle Walker didn't play. He was pissing on an expensive hotel.
Are these two things, is that the reason he didn't play?
I don't know. Maybe he felt like he was more anonymous after not having been on telly for a little while. Yeah,
he's badly hurt his ankle, hasn't he?
Yeah.
That's basically why he's not playing.
Oh, maybe it's like some sort of soothing technique. I don't know. The horrified guest said Walker looked around before pulling up his hoodie.
Well, which is good, I think.
To hide his face. I think he should have been pulling up his flies.
Not if you're about to pee.
I just arrived for a quick meal with my family. It was revolting. It wasn't just a quick wee.
No.
Nice.
Well hydrated.
He was there for ages. Mason, we were appalled.
Mason, I like the idea that your PR advice to Kyle Walker is to make this better, he should have pissed himself. I don't think that's a better story for Kyle, is it?
But you might get sympathy with that. You might think something's wrong with it, but here, also, they just think he's a delinquent.
I misread this quote where it said, I just arrived for a quick meal with my family. I thought it was Kyle.
Nice day out.
Oh my goodness me. So the only way this game should have been top of Match of the Day was if Brighton got something out of it.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
I think maybe they.
Even if there was maybe a fighty 1-0 for Man City.
Also, I mean,
2-1 last minute winner for City. Maybe
even
put
then,
it at the top.
Even then, I do think that Kate, you mentioned at the top of this that you're obviously referring to Spurs getting beaten at home by Brighton. You know, the reason Spurs was at home to Brighton was nothing to do with tactics. I mean, it was quite an even game, right? And then Brighton Trossard danced through a weirdly defending Spurs defence and scored.
No, I think they did a good job. I think they did a good job on
it. To stay in the game, to keep it
nil-nil. They were chopping it up.
So
they were messing with the rhythm all of the time. They were always...
Nice.
Yeah. I was quite
impressed
with them.
You can't do that at the end.
Against City. Yeah.
Exactly. Either way, it's a horrible fixture list for Brighton. To have three trips like that in a row, isn't it, really?
Apparently not.
Well, they
seem fine about it.
And
the Arsenal. It was Arsenal at the Emirates as well, that win.
Yeah.
Seemed fine about it.
Yeah.
Newcastle won 1-0 against Crystal Palace. Miggy Almiron with a lovely old strike and...
Then whipping his shirt off, thinking...
Lovely old six-pack, yeah.
Thinking Bruno Guimaraes looked absolutely buff when he did this at the weekend, didn't he?
Yeah. Amaral not quite the same level of physique, are you saying?
Well, I'm saying he's smaller.
He is ripped, obviously. But
yeah. Smaller and not as tanned, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
He looks more like a gleeful dancing kid, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's quite sweet.
Well, you can tell he's really popular, right? So I know he's very popular with the fans. Mm. I know that Eddie Howe was absolutely delighted afterwards, because Eddie Howe was, you know, was told by the interviewer that they won 6 home games in a row now, which obviously are the best run of home wins since Bobby Robson, I think 18 years or something like that.
2004 was the last time they did it. Yeah.
And Eddie Howe wanted to talk about how hard Amaral had been working on that specific move in training, and he was really pleased that he'd scored for it because he's such a great pro and a lovely lad and all the rest of it, and kept calling him Miggy. And I just thought, you know what? Eddie's taken a lot of vicarious pleasure in Amaral scoring there. And, you know, despite all the kind of things that are going on at Newcastle, which are, you know, unsavoury as we know, Eddie Howe seems like a good guy, and I don't agree with his decision to go and work there for all sorts of different reasons, but I revelled in his enjoyment of someone else doing well.
Really? Because to me, it sounds like because of where they are and because of where they're going next, he says, oh, I'm pleased for him. Just come out and say he's not going to be here next season.
I'm pleased for him enjoying it while he can.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just giving him a painting of a Spitfire. And saying, thanks very much.
He'll always have the highlights.
Exactly, because a couple of days ago, you had that interview with John Joe Shelby where he said, I just want to play it. I'd play it left back to play it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all like throwing their applications in.
Doesn't want to move house. Does not want to move house. He'd go and play for Hartlepool rather than move.
Eddie, Miggy, Staveley.
First time Amaral scored for Newcastle in a very long time, though. I don't know exactly how long, but it must be absolutely ages.
Yeah, they're now up to 40 points in 11th. They're somehow 3 ahead of Crystal Palace. Although Palace do have a game in hand over them. They didn't seem up for it, but I guess, Palace that is, but I guess, you know, it was fucking deflating the weekend.
It was, but then...
The semi-final, FA Cup semi-final is what I'm talking about.
But Patrick Vieira can console himself with the fact that his ghost is looming large over Mikel Arteta and everything he does. Mm. Mikel Arteta is always speaking with a man who thinks, God, I wish Patrick Vieira would stop picking up points at Crystal Palace, because he is genuinely a legendary midfielder here. He played here for a lot longer than me and he won a lot more.
Oh, I thought you meant because he was about to come and nick his job.
Well, I did mean that.
That's okay, good.
You mean he wasn't
bought? Because I said that to Jim and he was like, nah, whatever. Right. He's not buying it.
He's not, is he?
Well, Jim's not here.
No, he's
not. He can do it. He can take care of himself.
For a while, has he, Luke?
No, he hasn't.
Come to think of it, where's Jim? Luke Moore.
Email in. Well, it's nothing to do with me.
Sure.
Nothing to do with me.
Still proving what kind of path he is. Half-time interviews then. Luke, you're very keen on this idea. Proposals for half-time interviews with Premier League managers have been sent to clubs for next season. This is something they do in the NBA. And it sounds like a lot of fun.
They're mic'd up during team talks.
Or not.
Sometimes.
Ooh, I like that.
During the NBA. That'd be fun. I mean, you know, for anyone who's seen the documentaries with the... John Sitton, notably, Dave Bassett, any of those over the years, Warnock.
Yeah.
It is fantastic being in the dressing room. I don't think that's what's being suggested, but
that would be way better.
That would be nice.
So,
yeah.
You know, in the FA Cup.
You don't need more Shreves.
No, I don't think it'll be Jeff getting the job, would it? Hope not, anyway. You know, in the early rounds of the FA Cup, when a kind of non-league or semi-professional team is drawn against a bigger side, they always interview the manager of the smaller team or whatever. Yeah. They sometimes feel like it's okay to do that, even though they wouldn't kind
feels a bit patronising.
Disrespect, like a quote, proper manager. I think I'm led to believe it'll be a bit like that, which I think is a good thing. I think that, you know, I do understand that actually ultimately, despite my position on the fact that football is entertainment and we pay a lot of money to watch it, so we should get as much access as possible, I do think I probably would draw a line at the dressing room. I think that's probably something they deserve to be able to conduct their job professionally and in privacy. But up to and including that, I would say everything should be fair game. And I think, why not? I mean, if the manager's not got a huge amount to say to his team at halftime, then perhaps it could work. But I think the problem with it is, if you're in a real pressure situation, the manager's just going to refuse to do it because they're going to go, I've got 15 to 20 minutes maximum to work with my team here and I need to speak to them. They're not going to give up 2, 3, 4 minutes of that speaking to the press.
Well, don't they just mean, I took it as a complete, like, 2-second flash interview.
Well, then what's the point?
2-question flash
interview. What's the
point of it? Well, they already do that in France, for example.
Yeah, but they've still got to do it, right? They've still got, I mean, what I'm saying is managers are going to resist this, aren't they? Premier League managers are going to resist it. They're not going to want to do it, are they?
Well, the proposal is that they'll be limited to 5 half-time interviews per season and losing sides wouldn't.
Well, then what's the point of it? You're taking all the fun out of it. There's no point doing it.
Yeah, it does feel heavily curbed.
Yeah.
Do you think, or they're trying to get them to agree to it? And
I mean,
then
I think it's better sense to ask the coaches than it is to ask the players, because, like, in France, for example, where they're coming off the pitch and they stick the advertising boards behind them on the pitch and interview them on the pitch side as they're coming off.
Yeah.
It's like half time, players are out of breath. And I think I've got to get a drink.
How unfit are players in France? Just tell me, because that sounds bad.
If you're telling me that you can't have a 3-course lunch before you play a top flight game, I'm saying that's the end of society.
Yeah, I do like it in principle. So I would like.
Do you actually?
I like the idea of micing up a coach during the game or something.
That's
a sub or something like that. But they're never going
to
go for that.
So that's what you were saying. So sorry, that's good, I think. Stick a mic on the. If you were able to stick a mic on the and hear the halftime team talk, that'd be awesome. I don't think we need more like.
They're not going to do that. That's never going to happen.
I know, but this stuff is just more fluff.
They used to let NFL reporters go into the NFL dress rooms after the game, but then there's so many.
Yeah, it's so weird. People can't see naked.
Yeah, there's so many instances of naked people running around. They just stopped it, I think. But I think, you know, referees being mic'd up is something that should be looked at, I think. Seriously, they should look at that.
That was good. Do you remember all those years ago? I don't know, maybe you're a bit young for this, but when when Arsenal played at Millwall in the First Division, which I'm sure you remember well, David Ellery, the referee, was mic'd up.
Yeah, and remember a game with Tony Adams, just going, cheat, cheat, shout, screaming at him.
Well, because Tony Adams thought he'd scored from a corner. He thought the ball had gone over the line, and he chased David Ellery around the pitch going, you fucking cheat, that was my fucking goal.
Yeah, that was great.
It was good.
I mean, you shouldn't have been saying that, but it was great.
Yeah.
I don't think,
which is probably why they don't do it anymore.
Yeah. I don't think Shrevesy would be lined up after his thing with Brian Slifovanovic that time.
When he was the guy who shot Bambi, according to himself.
Yeah, he said that I was the man who shot Bambi live on television because he told Branislav Ivanovic he was suspended for the 2012 Champions League final after he picked up a yellow in the semis. I mean, if all the
things... Just having knowledge is not... Again, to return to the top of the show, I feel like having knowledge is your job, mate.
I don't think that's something to criticise Shrees for necessarily.
As in worrying about there. It. No, I think it's good.
But of all the things that seem to stick around Shreves, that's one of the ones that he gets hammered
Wasn't
for.
Wasn't it less what he said and more the way he said it?
Yeah, he did say he really gloried in it, didn't he? Like he was really pleased to be breaking the news to him.
Right.
But I guess that's what a lot of reporters are like, right? Both in and out of sport. They want to do that stuff. They want to get a reaction.
No. That makes him sound horrible.
Well, yeah. I've got news for you, Mason. I'll talk to you after the show.
There was something... But I mean, Jen, like... It's journalism, though, isn't it? I mean, I suppose it's telly, right? Yeah. The idea should never be to...
Breaking news to players, I don't think.
You need me to tell you that some people at Sky Sports can be quite unsavoury.
Let's move it on to the Scottish Premier. Do you know about Dundee manager Mark McGee?
Who's of course, he's a legend in the game.
And his skills at interviews. We would like to see him interviewed at halftime potentially. He's told a reporter he's been conducting some unusual preparation ahead of their vital relegation clash with St Johnstone in the Scottish Premiership this weekend. So, a win would move bottom of the table Dundee, that's them, within 2 points of St Johnstone. And he said, here we go. It requires no stone being left unturned because when the boys run out there on Saturday, we need to be able to say we've done everything we can to help them get a result. Sensible. Mm. There are two things I'm doing this week to focus us on getting the win. The first thing, I've gone on a diet. So I'm hungry all the time. I can then ask myself, why am I hungry? And I'm hungry because there is a big game on Saturday. The second thing I'm doing, and I've also told Charlie Adam that I'm doing this, is I won't be using any heating. So I'll be cold. I then ask myself, why am I cold? And I can say, because of the game on Saturday, Lee.
It's just a footballing Wim Hof.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Have you seen that show? He's got a show on telly now.
Has he?
Yeah.
Pops people in the ice
I've watched it.
Apparently you're supposed to get in like getting into a bath. When you go into really cold water.
Yeah, okay.
So I can believe because otherwise, if you go into like shock, right? And you swallow the water. I don't think that's what he's doing.
No, I don't think he knows what he's doing based on these comments. Mark McGee. I'm not talking about Wim Hof. I'm talking about Mark McGee. Mark McGee is a character, that shall we say. When I say he's a legend in the game, I mean a legend for being quite controversial. I mean, didn't he have a big run-in with like a teenage boy like a month ago?
Oh, no.
And he also got really pissed that I remember because I sometimes... when I can, follow the results of Aberdeen's. That's where some of my family are from. And Mark McGee was Aberdeen manager. I remember them getting beaten quite badly by someone they shouldn't have lost to. And he got really irate in a press conference then, saying, he got really pissed off at the questions, saying, look me up on Wikipedia. I've got a track record, you know. Look me up on Wikipedia. and he did it in a way that he thought he was being clever, but it just made him look ridiculous. So this is not doing anything to aid his reputation, I don't think.
He's been reading stuff, I think. He says, we need the players to change. If they keep doing the same things as they have done, it's the Einstein adage that if you keep doing the same things and expect a different outcome, then it is madness. You have to change something. And that is what I've adopted as part of the process. Charlie says, I'm off my head.
Presumably he means Charlie Adam there.
Presumably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how helpful this is to his players, to be perfectly honest.
I like the idea of doing something a bit unusual, but is this the right thing? I don't think it's the right thing. What kind of diet is this anyway? My understanding of diets is not that you're supposed to just be constantly hungry, are you?
Yeah, but I think very much with no, that's definitely not it. But also, what Mark doesn't seem to understand is that that's very much a metaphor, isn't it? You're hungry for you're hungry for like some kind of professional.
Is that what's happening?
Sustenance. No, I don't think he needs to directly relate the two things. You know, it's not
how unlike a British person to misunderstand metaphor.
If I'm hungry,
I'm shocked.
If I'm hungry for food, I'll automatically also be hungry to achieve in other areas of my life. That's not really how it works.
It's quite distracting, if anything.
I wonder what he made of that Eric Cantona quote about the seagulls and the trawler,
which I think was a fine thing to say.
Yeah,
people went mental about it, but
yeah,
they didn't get it, right? They just didn't get it.
I know.
They're just not as urbane and cosmopolitan as us, Andy. Next.
So what does he mean about the trawler then? Cantona, that is.
Well, it's fairly
not
obvious.
McGee.
It's a fairly obvious metaphor, isn't it?
Please.
Well, he said, you're following me around because you think you'll get bits of little nuggets of information and press that you can report in the press about me. It's obvious.
I thought he was just making a word picture because he wanted to be seen as like an effete poet.
He did that.
Probably can be both.
He did that at the FIFA Awards, didn't he? Where he turned up and picked
up. In a waistcoat and a flat cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a French Peaky Blinder. Great stuff.
That's your favourite look, isn't it?
No, I can't pull that off.
Your waistcoat.
It's my favourite look for Donny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Donny
was doing that before Peaky Blinders was even around.
Donny invented Peaky Blinders. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Not a lot of people know that. Tonight, Burnley against Southampton. Mm. That'll be fun for you, Luke.
Do not use the M word.
What, massive? Huge. Gigantic. Some people might say there's some kind of psychological reason why you don't like the word massive, Andy.
Say gargantuan.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Be more creative is what you're trying to say.
Actually, though, I think...
That is what I'm saying.
I think if we're going to get into it, I think two syllables is better than how many of it? Four syllables in that context.
Well, if you're building something up on television, you know, you need a
run-up.
Well,
it depends.
Gargantuan's much better for
that. But if we're going to talk about rhetorical techniques here, Brass, we can go into it. I would say in that context, the two syllables is stronger when you're trying to make a big point. Gargantuan, you get lost in the word.
Huge.
No, but like any
huge
word,
is possibly better.
Any word, if you use it too much, it loses all meaning.
True.
Agreed.
And that is what's happened in a football context.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a big game. I mean, I would personally, because I love the relegation drama, I would love to see Burnley win the game.
That's not the reason. Not the reason
Southampton going to chuck in another multi-goal defeat for the overall good of the Premier League?
Sadly, they only tend to do that at home.
Yeah.
Which makes it funnier.
Yeah. Tell Old Trafford season ticket holders that. It's been the only memorable game United have had at Old Trafford in the last couple of years.
I don't think Old Trafford season ticket holders want to hear anything from anyone about anything.
No.
If you're still with us.
After that.
Yeah, one thing they might want to hear is that Erik ten Hag's just been announced.
There we go. See?
Woo.
Expected for a while, but good to see it officially confirmed.
The perfect venue for breaking news is, of course, a podcast that is released later, but... Good to get your thoughts briefly on it, Brass, because I know obviously we talked about we did a massive like deep dive on the pain of being a Manchester United fan yesterday, I guess.
Yes.
But the thing seems to be about Ten Hag is that
I think Lars was 100% right when he said it's about the correct management and machinery around him.
Yeah, is that he can come in as the right idea, but he might not have the right stuff.
But the feeling is that, you know, there have been a couple of big backroom or upstairs departures already from United this week.
So it does
feel as if they're starting something anew for him. Now, obviously, it always feels better if it's the Pep Guardiola situation where all the management structures in there already, and the coaching genius simply has to step in and get on with it. But United,
but they've been
aren't
building
that
to
position.
Be around him for years, haven't they?
Yeah,
they've been piecing it together.
They had, yeah. So like, hopefully for United, they'll manage to pull that together quite quickly. It's funny, until Vish and Jules and Lars spoke about it yesterday, it hadn't even occurred to me that Ralf Rangnick might still be there to work with him. I'd always assumed that when he got this consultancy role, he'd maybe put in his face a couple of times and they'd quietly pay him off and shuffle him away. But if they do actually work together in a meaningful way, then that's interesting.
Mm.
I'm interested to see how that would work.
There's no question that it's the toughest time to come in and manage that club in the Premier League era. Mm. You know, he's taken the job on a day that the BBC sport comment headline is, you know, Man United have become a monstrosity. That's how severe the situation is in the eyes of people who follow the club closely, and the fans will no doubt agree it's a massive job. I don't think there's any manager in world football that can sort this out and deliver them back to where they feel they should be without all the things that you guys are talking about around them as well. So it remains to be seen. There's a school of thought that says, you know, Man United are being run this certain way. So while this is going to be the case for the foreseeable future and has been the case for a wee while now, certainly since Ferguson, why not just go out and get the best manager you can? Right? Just do that. Mm. Why stick with the Solskjaer when you can go and get a Pochettino when they're available, or a Conte? And people say, oh, you know, because it's about more than the manager. Yeah, fine, but they've not shown any real willing to sort that out. So why not just go and get the best coach you can? It's clear that Erik ten Hag is a well-respected coach, right? Mm. A very technical coach who can work in that environment and he's describing there. Does that mean that Man United will be delivered back to where their fans want them? In the foreseeable future, absolutely not. They're miles off it, and they will continue to be miles off it, whoever the coach is.
That's a really good point. And I think your point about it being such a difficult time for him to come in as well is around the fact that they've already had, we think it will take him, what, he's a 3-year projects guy potentially here, Erik ten Hag, and the fans and the setup is already just so frustrating that it's the kind of end of their tether vibes. I mean, do you think the fans are going to have the patience to really believe in the project for the next?
I think the football's been bad enough for the last couple of years that they will. Certainly the match going Manchester United fans. The thing is, if I was hoping it's going to go well for Manchester United and looking at it from their perspective, I just hope they support Ten Hag by going and buying the right players rather than the most commercially expedient players. And I think that's really, really important, that he's got players who he can work with, develop. I bet Ajax are hoping that as well. I'm just imagining Edwin van der Sar in a massive bath full of notes.
Yeah.
You know, like Puff Daddy.
Yeah. The club has become unmanageable. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's almost like a category misdefinition to say, oh, the manager will sort it out, because it's become unmanageable. And, you know, this best summed up by a comment I saw by someone yesterday or earlier today. You know, at the moment, Man United are a team that bring joy to millions of people every week. Just none of them support Man United. So I do. Look, the English football's a better place with a strong Man United in it, I think. So I do wish them all the best. But I think, you know, the problems go far, far deeper. And like I say, they're miles away from it. Miles away from it.
As we've said over and over when talking about Manchester United for the last however long, they basically just need to turn it into a team rather than a group of randoms who are all independently quite good.
Like a social media content provider first and football team second. You know, what happened against Liverpool, I know you guys covered it, but it's absolutely embarrassing. Like, it's not even about the result, because you can have a bad result.
They're not even the best social media content provider. They're not even the best retro outfitter. That's Arsenal.
They're not even the best team in Stretford.
If you need more of this, On the Continent is out later. Dot and Andy and Miguel Delaney. Miggy and Maron Delaney will be here to talk about tons of stuff about across European football. This week, they're discussing PSG closing in on the Ligue 1 title, what the situation is with Pochettino. Again, not the boss of Manchester United. Mm. Plus, what does the future look like for Atletico Madrid? They also get to the bottom of UEFA's latest reforms to the Champions League. Catch it later on Football Ramble Presents. Time to get out of here, unless you think there'll be any more breaking news you want to alert us to.
Nothing massive.
Nice.
Oh, Ramblers, don't forget to listen tomorrow. That sounds like there's plenty coming your way. Thanks for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.